the rest of the story. When our century was in its infancy, that which we know now as women's liberation was, it was prenatal in its concept. A special courage was required of the women who took up that cause at that time. And can you imagine the courage required of a sympathetic man, a man actively involved in the promotion of women's rights? I want to tell you about that young fella who went out on a limb and what happened to him. He was 6 feet, slender, black-haired, large eyes, calm face, winning smile. In other words, the proverbial tall, dark, and handsome. So striking was his appearance, it was said that when he walked down the street, people stopped talking just to watch him. He might have been a heartbreaker, a love'em and leave'em ladies' man, had he been so inclined. Instead, he emerged from his childhood and a remarkably close relationship with his mother. He emerged a champion of women's dignity. Now, remember, this was still very early in our century. Time-honored traditions were seldom debated. There was no alternative to paternal authoritarianism in the American family. Widows who remarried were frowned upon. And listen to this. If a woman became engaged and her fiancé died before the wedding, she was encouraged to remain chaste for the rest of her life. And naturally, women in politics were unheard of, literally. And this particular young man was determined to change all that. He began his crusade by writing numerous articles decrying the shameful treatment of women in society. Widows must not be ashamed to remarry, he wrote. Women, in order to effect social change, must first change their own lives, he wrote. The family unit itself, he continued, must alter to accommodate the future. His earliest supporters, appropriately enough, came from a girls' school, one of the country's finest. Subsequently, the organization of a dozen or more members, which he founded, addressed the greater issues of the women's movement. It was all very businesslike. Debate, study, social action, demonstration, publication. To lend credence to their cause, each member of the organization maintained the highest moral standards. No smoking, no gambling, no carousing, no drinking. And at the center of it all, their daring young leader, a man. Women should be independent persons, he said. Man could not be free unless woman was also liberated, he said. Any worthwhile society must instill in woman a consciousness of her social and political role equal to man's. And while more than a few of his male contemporaries ridiculed him at a distance, he held his ground. And he won for himself and for women's rights increasing respect. Spin-off organizations such as the Women's Work and Study Society began to emerge. Through their sponsorship, young women were sent abroad to be educated. Meanwhile, the young man who had started it all continued to use his mightiest weapon, the pen. He demanded women's suffrage. He denounced double standards of morality. Men and women, he wrote, were equally capable, equally dependable, equally responsible. And in time, his philosophies engulfed the entire nation. His overall sense of humanism was a sum of many parts, none of which was any greater than his belief in women's liberation. You see, the boy who learned of women's dignity through his own mother's example, the young man who dared to speak out while other men scorned and laughed, the man behind his country's women's movement, the pioneer in establishing women's rights, was China's Mao Zedong. And now you know the rest of the story.